Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. Happy holidays to all of you. I hope you've been enjoying this unseasonably warm weather in the Northeast and throughout Big Ten country. Hope that you people out in the far West are dealing with the snow and enjoying that you've got. But most of all, I hope that everybody's getting ready to spend some holiday time with their family and friends and enjoying it. I am very pleased to bring back actually a third-time person on Dishin' and Swishin'. But hopefully this time it's going to be with the job that I'm going to get to see him all summer, and hopefully it'll be for a long time. The new coach of the Connecticut Sun, Kurt Miller, joins us now. Coach, how are you?
Great, David. Good to be here, and happy holidays to everybody.
And, you know, Coach, you know, this actually I realized when I was looking through things. You know, I had you as head coach of Bowling Green and head coach at Indiana, so, you know, we missed the pit stop last year in Los Angeles, but it's always good to catch up with you, and congratulations. Welcome to Connecticut, and I know as somebody that's of the Connecticut Sun Media Group, I know I'm excited to have you here.
Well, I really appreciated that. It was a whirlwind and obviously something that happened and developed very quickly, but really excited about the opportunity and couldn't be more pleased to get started and start can't wait for everyone to come back from overseas and get the training camp.
Well, you know, one of the things that when I was looking up some things, I saw Brian's quotes when he hired you as a coach at the Sparks, and he pointed out two things in particular. One was he loved the fact that you were great at player development and also the pick and roll. Let's start with the player development side of that, because the Connecticut Sun, other than Camille Little and Jen Lacy, with 8 and 9 years respectively, is a very young team with only a couple people that have had as many as 4 years of experience in the WNBA.
Certainly one of the points that really excited me as the Connecticut Sun organization started to talk to me in the interview process of hiring a new coach, the young roster was very appealing, that their best days are still ahead of them. Many of them are playing overseas and are playing full year round. So I think a lot of them have their best days ahead of them, and I'm excited to get in the gym and work with them and can keep developing, not only enhancing their strengths, but trying to improve some of their weaknesses. But very excited about the young roster with, as you mentioned, some sprinkled in veterans, which is very important.
You know, you've got people. Camille came in last year and really made a tremendous impact with her being such a guiding force for some of these people, notably Kelsey Bone. She was such a big help being a stretch four. Now, I know you like to have those three-point shooters in addition to the pick-and-roll type of offense. So you would think that someone like Little going with a Bone and a returning Agumake will certainly give you a front-court rotation that really suits what you like to do.
Excited about it. Certainly, Camille and I have exchanged some email messages while she's overseas, and one of the things that I've tried to emphasize is how much I believe in stretch fours and how much they can protect a post-up game and a talented post-up game. And so she's a real vital piece as we move forward, because I love to play that way. I love to have forwards be able to handle the ball and kind of be a point forward out there making decisions and passing and shooting. But more than anything, I'm a big believer is offense is spacing and spacing is offense. And Camille helps do that right away. So we've had some good conversations, and I look forward to more. But she really fits the way that I would like to play.
And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, of course, Elizabeth Williams made big strides last year in her rookie year, coming on strong before suffering some injury. But, you know, the other thing that, you know, you had one Agumake case, and now it's on to number two. You know, and assuming that you don't go Coach Pepperdine in the winter months, hopefully Chiné will be the end of the Agumake chain for you for now. You must be looking forward to being able to continue to develop someone with the work ethic and the dedication to their craft that first NECA had and now Chiné.
Well, they're a terrific family. And as you mentioned, it's all the intangibles. They're fantastic. fantastic to coach. I mean, NECA is as hard worker as there is in the league, and just brings her work ethic to each and every day, not just the games, but certainly practice. And all I've heard about is Sinead is the same way, and I've spoken to her on the phone. We are going to connect immediately after the Christmas holiday again and exchange messages, and I'm really looking forward to her to get healthy and be back on the court and have the fans excited again in Connecticut. But a terrific family, both of them, incredible athletes. They're excellent at what they do, certainly around the basket in transition. And as you say, I look forward to continuing to develop her game more on the perimeter and more handling the ball and improve that assist-to-turnover ratio for us. But, as a first-time WNBA head coach, to have a player like her who kind of becomes the face of the franchise and is such a great spokesperson for the team out in the public, I'm very blessed with that opportunity.
That's one thing that you definitely have here is some high-character players. Kelsey Bone is terrific. I've always loved talking to her. And your guards, you've got Alex Bentley, Chelsea Gray, under contract. Hopefully you'll see a return to health of Allison Hightower. Jasmine Thomas stepped up and did an awful lot in terms of leadership and just steadying the team. And, then you've got Shaquina Strickland, who certainly fits your desires for a three-point shooter.
Certainly pieces in place. Obviously, like any organization, we're always going to look to enhance. And if we can improve the roster through free agency or trade, we have always got to look at those opportunities, but certainly a lot of young pieces in place. And, the player that I'm most familiar with through my 2 years in the Big Ten and obviously being in the Midwest while she was playing high school and through the recruitment process is Alex Bentley. And I've seen her it just be able to take over games, not only offensively, but what excites me is she has a chance to be a defensive stopper. She's got great length for her size. She can really thrive in deflections and steals. And I've already challenged her on some correspondence that we had back and forth that I'd really like to see Alex Bentley become an all-WNBA defensive player. And I think she has that in her. And it would be really nice to know that not only is she consistent and becoming more consistent at the offensive end, but if we count on her each and every night to be a defensive stopper for us, it would be a great step in the right direction.
Now, you also have the number 3 overall pick as of now. Now, you did some broadcasting early on this season. You've worked the preseason WNIT tournaments each of the last couple of years. You saw some talent there, and I'm sure that it's awful fast, so I don't believe that you've probably gotten out and seen too many people so far. But there's certainly some interesting players that could be available at that number 3 spot that fit into that rotation very well, be it a Tiffany Mitchell or any of the UConn kids that are coming out, Stewart Jefferson, and if Tuck decides to go, she certainly fits in too. Plus, there's a lot of posts too. It's a great place to be, number 3 in this draft.
It has the potential to be a tremendous draft class, certainly a lot deeper than last year. Obviously, last year we learned right at the last second that people entered the draft that you didn't expect to. And, it will be a waiting process to see who for sure enters the draft this year. But it's certainly a talented class. And if only San Antonio would tip their hat and let us know what they're going to do at 2, we could plan better at 3. But I think that's the excitement, that there's a little uncertainty on what's going to happen directly above us. And with that uncertainty, you have to be out and about watching players and trying to plan. But not only for 3, but 15 is exciting, and then 27 is exciting. With this draft, it will be hard to make our roster, but there will be talented players drafted in those spots. And I look forward to, getting them into the training camp and see if they can squeeze onto the team. But it's a nerve-wracking process, Dave, but it's fun going out and watching college players, and it's almost like recruiting, and you kind of dream and visualize how they would fit into your program.
Well, right, wrong, or indifferent, I won't address it at this point. I've talked about it with Coach Donovan before. There was that perception about her not liking UConn players for some reason. We know how good friends you are with Gino. In fact, you and I had talked back when you were Bowling Green, how he always used to – call and say, how about coming out and playing? But then he wouldn't come to you, which I can't blame him. So we know how much you respect and enjoy the friendship of Coach Auriemma. So I don't think there's going to be any questions there about you know, whether you had any interest in any of these people coming out of school from UConn.
No, I just have great respect for him and admire what he's all accomplished in the program and but how he does it. And you can just look around the league, and if you're a WNBA coach, why wouldn't you want to draft UConn players? And they're coached the right way. They're unselfish. You from top to bottom, you look across the league, they're coachable, and they're winners. And so I look forward to being a sponge. I guess that's my word. You know, when I get up into Connecticut full-time, I hope that the offer remains, that I can be a sponge and be around that program and be around Gino and Chris Daly and the rest of the staff. I just have great respect for their program. You know, if we will always do what's best for the organization and draft what we need and who we need and not necessarily where they play. But if it's the right fit, we are certainly not going to shy away from UConn players, that's for sure.
You know, Coach, looking at this season so far, it has been an interesting year. Gino's team, UConn, seems to be, you know, clearly the best team thus far, but they've shown some flaws against Notre Dame and some of their perimeter defense and all. And, of course, Notre Dame in itself is always a team that you have to worry about when as they get healthy. And South Carolina, Dawn's done a great job. What are your thoughts thus far on the start of the NCAA season, looking at it from your perspective as somebody that's coached one of the top mid-majors and then also a Big Ten team?
It's been interesting to watch the college game. I think Gino is the one that told me himself this, but I've heard this from multiple coaches across the country in the college landscape, is that there's a lot more good teams these days, but the great teams seem to be less. And so you see some more parity, but I'm not sure we have those great monster teams. And so clearly it looks like UConn is the best team, but South Carolina in their size and their depth is definitely a factor, and I think will be there. You can never count out Muffet and Notre Dame. They're well coached. They played undersized here early in the year. As they get some of their players back healthy to give them more of a close presence, they're going to just become more and more dangerous. But what is interesting to me is the amount of mid-major upsets of the Power 5 conference schools this year. And I'm not even sure you can consider them upsets. It seems like the Power 5 conferences from the middle down are very vulnerable, and there's some teams that aren't as strong. So if there's ever a year for some of the mid-majors to get hot in conferences during conference play and maybe steal a bid or two that would typically go to a Power 5 conference, it will be interesting to see how many at-larges certain conferences get to what they used to. But certainly, you know, it seems like the parity is greater. There's a lot more good teams, the good teams down into the 25 through 40 ranked teams. But it's sometimes sad not to see those fantastic, great teams that are at the top. And I'm not sure we have those great, great teams right now to compete with UConn, with just a few exceptions.
Well, you took Bowling Green 5 out of 11 years to the NCAA tournament, including the Sweet 16. I guess the next step is to see some of these mid-majors be able to not only get into the tournament, but really make an extended run. And, you know, like a Dayton showed last year, that is possible, as you were mentioning. So many good teams can knock off some of these Power Fives.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's fun every year to watch to see which mid-major team gets hot and can get to the Sweet 16. But I'd like to see a year where it goes beyond that. And certainly I thought that 2007 Bowling Green team that I was fortunate to coach had the ability to take one more step, and we just couldn't get by Arizona State to get the Elite Eight. You watch it year in, year out, and I'm waiting for that breakthrough to get another mid-major to the Elite Eight or beyond, because I think the Cinderella story in college basketball would be great, great women's basketball in March or April. So I'm still hoping for that. I still have a lot of mid-major pride in me, and that probably will never leave.
You know, Gino was saying on his radio show this weekend, I happened to be out at the time listening to it, that South Dakota, the Jackrabbits host a regional. So this could be the time where they make that run.
Well, it's South Dakota State is a tough team for me to hear you bring up because that was my last game in college basketball. Advancing to the quarterfinals of the WNIT with a very young team at Indiana. And when you go up there, it's just an unbelievable environment. I think we played in front of 6,000 or so that night, maybe a little bit more. And it was a very educated fan base, very passionate fan base, and not an easy place to win. So I'm not sure if it's their best team, but they're still very talented, really well coached. And so it would be fun to see teams like that make a run in the NCAA tournament.
So, Coach, getting some of the more serious business out of the way, of course, everybody is aware of the health issues that happened while you were coaching. Everything's good. Nobody has any worries. There's no concerns about you dealing with the stress of the WNBA, and you're in great physical condition now and able to handle everything. I assume you wouldn't take any chances otherwise.
Well, I've certainly learned through the years that I was very fortunate with my stroke on the sidelines in 2012 that I didn't have any effects from that, and certainly it was a wake-up call for me to take better care of myself. And it's the simple thing, getting more rest, making more time for myself for exercise, and certainly eating better. As I arrived back from the grocery store this morning, as I talked to you, I wouldn't want anyone to look in my grocery cart and judge my health by that, because certainly
it's the holidays.
let's talk it to the holidays. But I certainly would always challenge myself to eat better. But I certainly had that wake up call, and I'm fortunate, and I've changed some things in my life to handle the stress better. And I was just never off the clock for a long, long time. I was never off the clock. And when we won two championships, I wanted to win three. And when we won five, I wanted to win six. And when we won that seventh straight championship, how could we figure out how to win eight straight championships at Bowling Green? And so it was just the way I was wired, and almost every coach at the Division I level is probably like that. And we all got to make time for ourselves to make sure that we are healthy.
Well, Coach, you know, there are two Krispy Kremes inside Mohegan Sun, so we got to keep an eye. Do we have to put security on you to make sure that you can stay away from the Krispy Kremes?
Well, I'm trying to figure out, if I don't walk to the Krispy Kremes, how am I not going to walk to the buffet breakfast, which would be even worse. So I'm going to have to stay disciplined over there, because I've already found some bad areas to walk in the morning, that's for sure.
Coach, and of course the other thing is, you know, I don't know, do I say congratulations for being the first openly gay head coach in a pro sports league in the United States? Is that something that I say congratulations, or do I say it's about time, or do I say it really doesn't matter? Because I'm not really sure, you know, when I read that, I said, oh, that's kind of neat, and then moved on.
Well, and certainly, you know, the headline seems sensationalized, the thing that I hope is my story is an inspiration to some LGBT youth that are struggling and dream themselves of chasing a career in athletics and sports and coaching in the front office, that as a gay man, that you can still chase those dreams and go after those aspirations that they have. And now there's someone out there that has lived very authentically and openly since 1996. It's never been a big part. I've never talked about it a lot, but I've never shied away from introducing my family and my longtime partner and our boys that we have raised. And so it's something that I never shied away from, but it was something that I didn't feel like I needed to seek out media attention. Or the few times that I was approached by national media, just didn't feel like it was necessarily the right time or the right point for the story. So now is the time, and I think if anything, I hope my story can be an inspiration to the youth across America who may be struggling but have dreams of being in collegiate sports or pro sports.
Absolutely, and you know, and there's no question that it's nice to see that there was no ceiling. You know, I did read an article where you had mentioned you were wondering at some points, you know, what would there ever be a ceiling that stopped you? And it's nice to see that there is none there.
And I was treated great through my 24 years in collegiate sports. I certainly was sought out after at some college jobs and interviewed, and even the jobs that I didn't get or weren't offered, I don't think had anything to do with my sexual orientation. I can look back at a few of the jobs through the years that I interviewed for, and they went a different direction and hired someone else. And I can honestly look at anyone who was talking to me and say, they hired a coach that at that time was certainly better than me. And so it was just fantastic that I don't believe it's ever been an issue throughout my entire coaching career. And I hope that, you know, it rings loud in people's ears that I've been treated very fairly and honestly throughout my experience in college and pro sports.
Seems to me the biggest difference between this and your other coaching jobs was those were rebuilding jobs, and I think that knowing Mitchell and Mitchell Addis and Chris Cienko the way I do, this isn't going to be a rebuilding job. They want to see you in the playoffs right away.
You know, there will certainly be some pressure to have some success, but with change and a new coaching staff and a new system, I have to ask for patience from everybody, knowing that there's a lot of pieces in place, but change is always takes a little bit of time and adjustment. But I do know rebuilding. I walked into a Bowling Green program that had fallen on tough times, and certainly an Indiana program that had no tradition and was coming off a 6-win season. And so I could look at both Mitchell and Chris in the eye and tell them I don't think it's a rebuilding job, but I believe there's a lot of pieces in place. And if we work hard to enhance and round out the roster with a few tweaks here or there, then I believe that it could be a special team. And ultimately, they want to win a championship for that tremendous fan base and organization. And I don't know, you know, how fast we can achieve that, but I do believe that we can have some success early in my tenure, and that's going to be the motto, and that's going to be the expectation when the players get back from playing overseas, that why not us, and why not now, and get after it right away and chase some of those dreams that we all have.
Well, Coach, to bring things full circle and to bring a close, rebuilding also means player development, and that's what we started at as one of your strongest points, and with the young team that we have in Connecticut, I'm sure that's going to be your focus. Kurt, it's great to have you in Connecticut. I think I think the world of you as a coach, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm even more excited about this team going into the summer now.
I'm really excited, and I said from the beginning that I'm going to ultimately be judged during my tenure on the communication with the players, and I don't care what level you coach at. It comes down to relationships with the players, and I found out very quickly in my year as a pro coach that it didn't change. You know, having a great relationship with those players in the locker room, knowing that they care, that knowing they know for sure that you care for them both on and off the floor allows you to coach them and challenge them at times when you need to. And so I really believe that ultimately, all the X's and O's aside, all the personnel that comes and goes through the organization, the bottom line is communication is going to be the key. Can we form the chemistry necessary for a pro team to have success? So communication, chemistry is the key, and hopefully as we get into the season, you'll see some of that translate onto the floor and see a close-knit group fighting for each other.
Sounds good to me. Coach, it's always a pleasure. Again, happy holidays to you and your family. Enjoy it, and we'll look forward to having you in here in Connecticut, hopefully without snow.
Thanks, David. Happy holidays to all.